Matthew chapter 27. When the morning came, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. Then Judas, who had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, felt sorrowful and brought back the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, "I have sinned in that I have betrayed innocent blood." And they said, "What is that to us? You see to that." Basically, they're saying, "So what? We don't care." And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself. Now remember, at the end of chapter 26, Peter had just denied Peter had denied Jesus three times. And when he heard the rooster crow, he realized what he had done. And he felt so ashamed. And it says that he went out and wept bitterly. He had godly sorrow. He repented of his sin. And he went on to be a faithful gospel preacher, continued to be a faithful apostle to Jesus. That is having godly sorrow. Now, what did Judas do? On the other hand, Judas, he also felt very sorry. But instead of making it right, I find it so sad about Judas Iscariot, because Judas Iscariot, despite the fact that he betrayed the Savior of the world, he still could have gone to heaven. He could have repented, and he could have prayed to God for forgiveness and gone on to live a productive life for Christ. But instead, he went and killed himself. And so we know where Judas is for all of eternity. And I find that really sad, because he didn't have to be lost. And the chief priest took the silver pieces and said, "It is not lawful for us to put them in the treasury, because it is the price of blood." And they took counsel and bought with them the potter's field to bury strangers in. Therefore, that field has been called the field of blood to this day. Then what was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled. And they took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of him who was valued, whom those of the children of Israel valued, and gave them for the potter's field, as the Lord appointed me. Now, I found that passage in Zechariah 11, 12, and 13. Matthew says, "Jeremiah, not a big deal to me. Jeremiah certainly could have said it too, and we just don't have it written. This could have been a transcription error by the transcribers." Because remember, the transcribers of the, 1611 King James Version of the Bible were not inspired. They were just regular men. So they could have put Jeremiah instead of Zechariah. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I have no problem with it at all, because Zechariah said it, and Jeremiah certainly could have said it too. And Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus said to him, "You say so." And when he was accused by the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Then Pilate said to him, "Do you not hear how many things they testify against you?" And he did not answer him a word, to such an extent that the governor marveled greatly. And I can see why. I mean, if I was grabbed and arrested and accused of things that I hadn't done, I'd be pitching a fit. I mean, I would be screaming bloody murder. "I'm innocent. I didn't do this. You guys are wrong. Blah, blah, blah." And I think most people would have. And Jesus was not doing that. He was remaining silent for the most part. So this confounded Pilate. I mean, if you're innocent, why aren't you screaming about it? Well, we know why. Because this was meant to be. This was a fulfillment of God's plan from the very beginning. Jesus was allowing this to happen to himself. Now, at that feast, the governor was accustomed to releasing to the people a prisoner whom he wanted. And when they had a notable prisoner called Barabbas, we'll find out in another gospel account that Barabbas was a murderer. I mean, this was a bad guy.
Therefore, when they had gathered together, Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ?" For he knew that they had delivered him because of envy. When he was sitting down on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, "Have nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things in a dream this day because of him." I find that interesting. I don't know why she dreamed about him. I doubt that it was from God, because she was trying to stop this, and this was God's will. So it was probably just coincidence. She probably knew that this man was being unjustly charged and convicted, and she probably had a conscience. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. This is what I call crowd mentality. And we see it even today, all over the place. We see riots happening because people are in the crowds and they're getting people all riled up and they're yelling and screaming, you know, "Let's go burn this down. Let's go destroy this. Let's go do that." And the crowd mentality, people that wouldn't normally do that on their own just go along with this crowd because it just gets them ramped up, pumped up. I think that's what's happening here. The governor answered and said to them, "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" They said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "What then shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ?" They all said to him, "Let him be crucified." And the governor said, "Why? What evil has he done?" Well, they don't even have a good answer because they're all pumped up now. Because the chief priests and the scribes are in the crowd and they're getting them all riled up. But they cried out the more, saying, "Let him be crucified." When Pilate saw that he could not prevail, nothing, but rather that a tumult was made. In other words, he had lost control. This was a downright riot now. He took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, "I am innocent of the blood of this just person. You see to it." Now, Pilate could have washed his hands all day long. It didn't matter. He is not innocent of the blood of Jesus. He had the power to stop this, but he chose not to. He was afraid. Then all the people answered and said, "His blood be on us and on our children." I'm sure they regretted saying that later. Then he released Barabbas to them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. I find it fascinating that just one sentence, "and when they had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified." Scourging, man, that was a major thing. That might have been just as bad or worse than the crucifixion itself. From my understanding, a scourging is, they have this handle with these leather straps tied to it, and maybe even like sharp metal pieces on the end, and they just start slamming you on your back, and it's just tearing the flesh off of your back. And they did it 39 times. The traditional method, I think, was 40 times, but they didn't want to go over 40, so they usually would do it 39 times so as not to go over the 40. Horrible, horrible. I mean, Jesus' back must have been just completely just torn up and just shredded by the time they got done. And yet it just says, "And when he had scourged Jesus," that's all that's said about that. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the common hall and gathered the whole band of soldiers to him. So he just went through a physical, violent shredding of his back. Now he's about to go through some emotional, psychological trauma. And they stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him. When they had woven a crown of thorns, they put it on his head. I doubt that they placed it gently on his head. They probably crammed those thorns into his scalp. And a reed in his right hand. I mean, they're making mockery of him. And they knelt before him and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they spat on him and took the reed and struck him on the head. And after they had mocked him, they took the robe off him and put his own clothing on him and led him away to crucify him. So he's already been physically tortured and beaten. Now he's being humiliated. It would... I mean, it would have been really hard if you had the power to call 12 legions of angels down and destroy everyone within a 20-mile radius. He could have done that, but he didn't, because he knew this needed to be done in order for somebody like me, 2,000 years later, if I live a faithful Christian life, I can stand before God on Judgment Day and not have to be accountable for every sin I've committed my entire life, because Jesus took that on. It's amazing. And as they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. They compelled him to bear his cross. When they had come to a place called Golgotha, that is to say, a place of a skull, they gave him vinegar mixed with gall to drink. When he had tasted some of it, he would not drink. I'm not sure exactly what this mixture is for. I've heard various things that it's kind of like an anesthetic, or I don't know. It doesn't matter. He didn't drink it, though, because he needed to be, let's just say it had some fermentation to it or something, kind of like a alcohol or some kind of anesthetic. He didn't want to drink it because he needed to be focused. He needed to be sober. He needed to be focused. He needed to take this on with a clear head. And they crucified him and divided his garments, casting lots that what was spoken of by the prophet might be fulfilled. And that's in Psalm 22:18. They divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. And sitting down, they watched him there, and set up over his head his written accusation. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Of course, again, that's just, they're just mocking him. They don't believe it. Then there were two thieves crucified with him, one on the right hand and another on the left. And we'll hear about them more later in another account. And those who passed by reviled him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross," just taunting him. Likewise, the chief priests also, mocking him with the scribes and elders, said, "He saved others, he cannot save himself. If he is the Son, if he is the King of Israel, let him come down from the cross, and we will believe him." Baloney. These guys had seen miracle after miracle that Jesus had done, supernatural acts that could only be done with the power of God. And they would not believe. So they certainly are not going to believe if he saved himself from the cross. He trusted in God. Let him deliver him now if he will have him. For he said, "I am the Son of God." The thieves who were crucified with him also mocked him. Now at this time, it's, you know, it does say that they both mocked him. But we know from another account that one of the thieves repented. Now, from the sixth hour to the ninth hour, now according to the Jewish timing, that would be from noon to 3 p.m., there was darkness over all the land. Now, of course, that's not normal. From noon to 3 p.m., complete darkness over the land. That's not normal. So that's a miracle. And about the ninth hour, around 3 p.m., Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani." That's from Psalm 22, verse 1. And that is to say, my God, why have you forsaken me?" If you'll read Psalm 22, you'll see that it's just a human pouring out their heart, a human in terrible suffering pouring out their heart, pouring out their emotions. Because Jesus was a man. He was God, but he was also a man. And so he went through all of the same things we go through. The pain, the suffering, the fear. And, you know, he'd already been scourged and beaten and humiliated and spat on and mocked. And now he's been crucified, hanging on a cross until he dies. I'm sure there were a lot of emotions going on. Some of those who stood there when they heard that said, "This man is calling for Elijah." And immediately one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him a drink. The rest said, "Leave him alone. Let us see whether Elijah will come to save him." It sounds like there was at least one person that had some compassion on him and tried to soothe him with whatever this liquid was.
Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, gave up his spirit, so he died. And behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from the top to the bottom. That's very significant, because the veil in the temple was the place where the Ark of the Covenant was. It was called the Holy of Holies. It was the place where the high priest would go once a year to sacrifice for the sins of the people. And here it is being torn in two from top to bottom. Now, what does that say? To me, that says this is the end of the law of Moses and the beginning of the law of Christ. And the earth quaked and the rocks split. I mean, this had to have been quite a sight to see. I mean, first of all, it was unnaturally dark during the middle of the day. Then you've got earthquakes with rocks splitting open. And then it says, and the graves were open. I mean, this sounds like a crazy movie. And many bodies of the saints who slept arose and came out of the graves after his resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many. Can you imagine all these people rising from the dead and going about into Jerusalem and talking to people? And yet people still didn't believe. You know, you've got people today that were like, well, you know, I might believe the Bible if I saw it for myself. Are you kidding? These people saw stuff for themselves. Amazing things. And still didn't believe and obey. Now when the centurion and those who were with him watching Jesus saw the earthquake and those things that had been done, they feared greatly, saying, truly this was the Son of God. And many women who followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering to him, were there watching afar off, among whom were Mary Magdalene, and Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's children. And when evening had come, there was a rich man of Arimathea named Joseph, who himself was also Jesus' disciple. He went to Pilate and begged for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded the body to be delivered. And when Joseph had taken the body, he wrapped it in a clean linen cloth and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had cut out in the rock. And he rolled a great stone to the door of the sepulchre and departed. And Mary Magdalene was there, and the other Mary, sitting across from the sepulchre. Okay, so Jesus has now been, we would say, buried. He was put inside a tomb. Now the next day, which I think this would be Saturday, because I think he was crucified on Friday. I still haven't done my study yet of how all of that timeline. Now, the next day, which I think is Saturday, which followed the day of the preparation, which I think was Friday, and the day of preparation, I think, is just some preparing for the Sabbath, the chief priests and Pharisees came together to Pilate, saying, Sir, we remember while he was yet alive, that deceiver said, After 3 days I will rise again. Therefore, command that the sepulchre be made secure until the third day, which I think would be Sunday, lest his disciples come by night, steal him away, and say to the people, He is risen from the dead, so that the last error shall be worse than the first. In other words, let's put a guard on the temple, on the tomb, and let's make sure that his disciples don't come in the middle of the night, steal his body, and then tell everybody, oh, look, he rose from the dead, because his body's not in the tomb. Which, of course, is not what happened, but that's what they thought might happen because they didn't believe. Pilate said to them, You have a guard. Go your way. Make it as secure as you can. So they went and made the sepulchre secure, sealing the stone and setting a guard. Now, as far as sealing the stone, I don't know what they did to seal the stone. But they had a guard there. They sealed the stone, and they made sure that the tomb was secure. And that is the end of Matthew 27.